Have you ever had a cringe-worthy episode when sharing the gospel? I know that I have. Well, on this episode of Unapologetic, we're going to cover three things to avoid as we share the gospel. As we defend truth without compromise with Dr. Bobby Conway, I'm your host, Tim Hall. Well, Bobby, I think we can admit that evangelism can sometimes be scary. It can be, we can avoid it at all costs sometimes. Mm-hmm. We probably should be doing it more just in general. We've talked about that in a few past episodes. But there are some things that as we're going out and sharing our faith that we should think about trying to avoid doing. So we're going to address that. But I thought it might be good for you to kind of just open us up with a little bit of maybe why evangelism is important to the Christian life first.
Well, we're living in a time where, unfortunately, a lot of the millennials don't believe it's important. And studies show that a large percentage of them think it's morally wrong. Now, that is confusing, right? Like, how could a Christian think it's morally wrong to share the gospel? Well, we're not reading our Bible, number one, and we're being very influenced by culture and social media. And so while everybody's out of the closet, it seems like the church has went evangelistically into the closet. And so it's important for us to share because Jesus commanded us to share. And Jesus came into the world to seek and to save that which is lost. He said that the harvest is ripe, but the laborers are few. And so we need laborers to go out into the harvest field. And so we all need to realize that we're called to be on mission as Christians. That doesn't mean we're called to full-time missionary professional work, so to speak, but we're all called to live on mission full-time in our life, like, so to speak, being aware of those opportunities. And ultimately, it's because people are, you know, separated from God, and we can share the gospel that can help them get reconciled. And so we believe that the gospel is good news. And I think sometimes we don't treat it like it's good news. I think that there's other things that seem like there's better news to talk about.
Right.
But I love the whole idea of the gospel. By the way, that wasn't unique to Christianity. This idea of euangelion, good news, this was a common language, but it was taken as a word and literally Christianized and going, this is the best news.
Yeah.
When you take euangelion, when you take the gospel, when you take the good news and you show it in Christ, it's the best news.
Yeah. Well, and I know that as we take that good news out, sometimes we can have some missteps and we can fumble and we can walk away from a conversation being like, oh man, that was really bad. And sometimes we can walk away from a conversation with somebody saying, man, I want to pray that prayer. I want to accept Jesus into my heart. And there's several different things that can happen in between there. So let's kind of talk about some of these three mistakes that we should avoid doing. And before we get to them, I would invite our audience that if you're checking this out on YouTube and you think that we have missed a mistake, that you think there's other things that we should have covered, you can go ahead and leave those in the comments. We would love to read those at some point. So you and I have talked before about one of the things that we need to avoid doing is misreading the situation, and we need to learn how to respond properly in the context of kind of what's going on. So talk to us a little bit about some of those mistakes that fall under this category.
Yeah, sure. I'd say a couple things. Obviously, people will be able to find things we didn't talk about because it's only about a 25-minute show.
Sure, yeah.
So that won't be a hard project. But nevertheless, it's important that we have good social skills. Mm. And I hit on this a lot because I think this becomes very problematic. In particular, when you see the way that people are online, I hate the way people communicate with people online. It's almost like they're not human. And so they're just, you know, interacting with, you know, like a piece of data or something, like a machine. But then sadly, some people, they're so bad with social skills, they'll even talk to people that way in person.
Right.
And so I think that humility should pave the way for our, you know, outreach, and we should begin to ask questions of people. So if you engage with a person that's a non-believer, ask them questions. Don't just presuppose you know what their objections to Christianity are. Pay attention to their social cues. If they're leaning in, if they're interested, if they're asking questions, great, keep the conversation going. If they're uncomfortable, pay attention to that as well. And so, for example, You know, I have a person that I know that anytime we go out and we eat out, he always likes to ask the waiter if there's something that we could pray for the waiter on.
Yeah.
Well, that can be a great question.
Yeah.
But I've also seen the waiter get very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so when the waiter gets really uncomfortable, you need to know how to back off. Mm-hmm. Like in just some EQ, some relational wisdom can help you to see this person is uncomfortable. Yet it can also open up great doors. So sometimes as Christians, we're so worried that we're going to make someone uncomfortable, we don't ever crack the door open. But sometimes we crack the door open so much that we don't realize people are trying to shut it on us. And so I think that things like asking questions, making sure that we're being kind, making sure that we're being humble, making sure that we're connecting, I think that those can go a long way, because at the end of the day, if somebody doesn't believe in Jesus, wouldn't it be great if we still made a friend?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think those are some really good points. I think one of the other things that kind of falls in this category is in a recent episode of Unapologetic, we talked about this assess acrostic that you had laid out, and just being able to be aware of maybe where people are at through those questions will help them, help you navigate the conversation to know whether or not they are antagonistic or whether or not they're really seeking or they're kind of in this gathering evidence stage and whatnot. So I think that's a really important piece to understand. And that episode is on our YouTube channel as well. So if you're listening to this on the radio, you can head on over to our YouTube channel and check out that and get some more details. But we've talked about some of those things. One of the ones that I thought was really funny, and I'm guilty of this often, is just talking too much. Mm. Is really just making the conversation just, I have all this stuff that I want to tell you.
Yeah.
And never let them get a kind of word in edgewise where it's like, yeah, we're supposed to be sharing, but it needs to be relational. So how do we avoid talking too much should be one question.
Well, in the Bible even says that in the book of James, right? Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And when we don't listen well, we get angry quick because we're not able to kind of really try to validate where someone's coming from. And so I think it's important for us to listen well. And I think that relationships, don't get built unless they're going two ways. You're getting to know about one another and you're connecting with each other. I get that we're excited to share the gospel, but we don't want to overwhelm the person. And I've been guilty of that too, Tim. I mean, I know what it's like to, overwhelm the situation. I also know what it looks like to be disturbed by wrong methodologies, where I remember I was doing a course at Logos in Bellingham, Washington, and I went out there and I was teaching my apologetics course or my evangelism course, and I walked outside of the Logos building, and there was a guy standing out in the parking lot, and he had his billboard and ranting about, all the things that God hates.
Yeah.
And I walked up to him and I engaged in him in a conversation. I'm like, bro, do you think this is the most effective way to spread the message? Like, I wasn't questioning his sincerity.
Yeah.
I was questioning the rightness of what he was doing. And, because I didn't agree with his approach, he ended up telling me that I needed to get saved and that I am lost and I am lukewarm. And I was watching this guy turn so many people off. Yeah. Now listen, the gospel is going to be offensive.
Right.
The gospel is going to turn people off. It's going to be the stench of death to those who are perishing. And so we can't guarantee that the gospel is not going to be offensive. The gospel will be offensive.
Right.
But we don't have to let the gospel be offensive, not us.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Like let God's word do the work, but not us being obnoxious.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to transition to this next point. Sometimes we don't have good, personal skills, EQ, as you said, but also sometimes we go into a conversation and we're not equipped to be able to even start having that conversation. So tell us a little bit about that. We also oftentimes avoid equipping ourselves to engage in conversation, to engage in sharing the gospel appropriately. What can be some of the drawbacks and fallout from that?
Well, I think that we're overwhelmed by just so much different methodologies on option. I mean, like when I became a Christian, it was the James D. Kennedy, go door-to-door evangelism explosion, yeah. Or they had the four spiritual laws, yep. With Campus Crusade for Christ, now called CRU. You had the Alpha series that came out. I mean, there was all these different series that were coming out, and then the church just locks on, and then this is the way we all need to do it. And I think that rather than giving somebody a methodology, there's a message to be shared, and this yeah. message needs to be curtailed. Like Paul says, I become all things to all people so that by whatever means I can win them to Christ.
Yeah.
And so this is where I'm going to be wise enough to realize the objections of the different people that I'm engaging with. And so we tailor our approach. So I like to think about customized, spiritually sensitive evangelism versus just a package methodology that people can see through. I think that if we have a spiritual sensitivity and we're asking people questions and we begin to grasp the worldview, well, where should a Christian be studying? We'll be studying around the questions that your non-believing friends are asking,
yeah.
Or at least should be asking.
Right.
And so if you have Mormon friends, understand Mormonism. If you have secular friends, understand secularism. If you have LGBTQ plus friends, understand that worldview.
Yeah.
And so understand then that those particular worldviews, those frameworks are going to have objections to our Christianity, and be prepared to answer those, but to be prepared to do so with gentleness and kindness and humility.
Well, and you have created quite a catalog, both on our 1 Minute Apologist page, of answers to some of those questions. We've interviewed several well-known apologists, and you have done over 500 videos on your own answering some of those questions. So the resources are out there. And in addition to that, you do your weekly radio show on Pastor's Perspective, where people are calling in and asking some of those questions. So there are definitely several opportunities just with what you have put out there to be able to equip people and to be able to find those answers. In addition to that, I'll just keep going here. We have our Apologetics Crash Course, which you can find the link for that in the description of this video. It's 1MinuteApologist.com/ACC, and you can check out our Apologetics Crash Course to, again, continue to be equipped to be able to share the gospel. There's that one piece of, as soon as you start to tell what God has done in your life, it's inevitable that you're going to get questions.
That's right.
About, well, how do you do this, and how do you do this, and how do you do that? So let's jump to this third one. Oftentimes, we avoid living like our message. Mm. And so this causes a misalignment between what we're calling people to, what part of the gospel is, and the way that we're actually acting. So yeah. Tell us, why is that important, that those things kind of line up?
Yeah, that they converge. I mean, this is crucial. I just came out of lunch with a lady that my wife and I have been friends with for years. And man, her message and her life, they just converge beautifully.
Yeah.
And we were so encouraged by our time with our old friend, just saying, you know, you really do model the message.
Mm.
And I think that modeling the message is important. I think that it's been all over the news in the last several months. I mean, we've talked about some of the things that have created disillusionment,
yeah.
From Ravi Zacharias to Carl Lentz to different spiritual leaders that are out there where these falls happen. And nobody expects us in ministry to be perfect, but they do want us to acknowledge our imperfections.
Yeah.
And so I would say, yeah, we got to take some pressure off, because even in our workplace, if you're a Christian, you're going to get frustrated around your non-believers sometimes. But you can just be humble and say, hey, I'm sorry, I was on edge. And just by being self-aware and having that humility, people can be drawn to you instead of just being prideful and rooted in your ways. So I think that this is a burden of mine for the church. I think about the whole painting by Van Gogh, Starry Night. And Van Gogh did that painting, and people can go to Google and they can look it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, the sky is just brilliant, with the stars are illuminated with all these yellows, and the city town and the little village, they're all lit up. But the one place that there's no light is in the church.
Yeah.
And sadly, I think what Van Gogh was showing here is, look, a lot of people are finding hope in creation, but they're not finding hope in the Creator, not finding hope in the church. And it's important for us to be able to make sure that we show that the church really is a place that people can find direction and hope. Not that we're going to be sinless, but that we're humble and that we acknowledge it. I wrote the fifth gospel based off Gypsy Smith's quote, the late British evangelist. He says there's five gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and the Christian, and most people will never read the first four.
Yeah.
In other words, they're reading our life. Our lives are supposed to be not inspired, but inspiring.
Yeah.
Our lives are supposed to make a difference. And so I have found that people are incredibly forgiving for our fallenness, as long as we recognize our fallenness. I would say that we should strive to be an example. Jesus said he's the light of the world, but he also said, you are the light of the world to the church.
Yeah. Yeah, that we're supposed to go to be ambassadors. And I think that what you said, and I'm just going to reiterate it because it's so important, is that we're going to mess up, we're going to fail, we're going to make mistakes, we're going to, you know, react in a wrong way sometimes, we're going to overtalk, or maybe you're going to, you know, be harsh. But to go back to that person and say, man, I'm sorry, that, mm-hmm. that there's forgiveness that you're seeking, and that there's a genuine sense that you are apologetic that really to what's going on is huge in that. Because I think when people see that misalignment, it really turns people off. And I would encourage anybody that's checking this out to pick up Bobby's book, The Fifth Gospel, because you have a whole section in there about Christian hypocrisy and how we should address some of those different points that are raised. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing with Christian hypocrisy, the word hypocrite, it means actor.
Mm, yeah.
And so this idea of being a hypocrite is being an actor. So sometimes what happens is some people know how to act all the right motions, and their heart's not in it. So the Pharisees, and Jesus went after these actors, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, you know how to act in prayer, you know how to act in fasting, you know how to act in brokenness, but your heart's not in it. So the actors sometimes, they might look like they're morally put together, but a non-believer can smell an inauthenticity.
Right.
Then you get others, they're not really actors. They're just kind of like where Paul says in Romans 6:1, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin so that grace may abound? Yeah. By no means. We die to it. How can we live in it any longer? Well, there were antinomians, no law, people who were just, I believe in Jesus, but I'm going to live however I want.
Right.
And so they're going to act however they want, right? And so these people are the ones that really can make a mess, because they're just out there thinking, you can sin all you want, but it doesn't really matter because Jesus and the cross will cover it, but they're not really saved either. So you got to be careful that you're not acting and doing all the right motions, but neither you got to be careful, but you also got to be careful that you're not worried about living it. You're just living like the world and then using the name of Jesus as kind of a, you know, ticket home to heaven.
Yeah. I think one other thing that I want to kind of draw out here and get your thoughts on under this last point is being parents, right? I mean, that's so in front of my mind, is how we're acting towards our kids and how we're acting with our families, because those are sometimes the group of people that maybe sees us at our worst sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you're trying to, you know, be Jesus, you're trying to share Jesus with maybe your cousin or, you know, maybe your older brother or something like that, and they're looking at you and being like, man, I know you. Like, And so that can be really difficult. So how should we navigate maybe some of those really close family relationships where people know us pretty well and see us mess up a lot?
Well, I mean, if Jesus is the real deal to us, I mean, they're going to see that Christ means something to us. I mean, I think about even with my wife and my children, like I have seen their ugly side, but I don't question one bit their love for Jesus.
Yeah.
And they've seen my ugly side, and I know that they believe. And so I say, on one side, be encouraged, because if it's real, if you genuinely are a believer and you love the Lord, people can see your dark shadow side. And look, I mean, we've had drama in our home. I mean, we know what it's like to have been so frustrated, to get yelling at each other, to be frustrated, to stomp out of the house, to go get in the car and have to go on a drive, to avoid each other, to not want to talk to each other, to berate each other, to put people down. All that stuff, to say inappropriate words that you know you're not supposed to say, to demean one another. We've done all those things in the Conway household. Like, we're not above
that.
You
too, yep.
Yeah. Yep. I don't like saying that, but I think the thing that happens is we once all that's over with, we come back and we group up and we acknowledge our sin.
Yeah.
You know, we've sinned. We didn't handle this right. I'm sorry. Let's pray. And I think that that's the best that we can do. I mean, it's tough sometimes because I think the home, the reason we get there that way sometimes is because this is the place where the pressure's supposed to be off of us a little bit.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be this performance pressure.
Right.
Now, sadly, there's a lot of homes that feel that way. But I mean, home needs to be a place that you can come home, kick your shoes off. And I think sometimes, yeah, we get a little bit too comfortable. Like we worry more about what the person's going to think of us on the first occasion of meeting someone
right.
than the person that we sleep next to
yeah.
at night when we go to bed. Yeah. And that's not good.
Yeah, no, that's good. So there are a number of other things that could have been on this list. We have a few other things that we just are going to recommend, some things to keep in mind as mm-hmm. we go out and share the gospel, as we're doing evangelism, sharing that good news. And one of those things that you and I talked about was sometimes we just, we don't pray enough before we engage in this activity. And again, it's an activity that we are called to do, that we should have this deep desire to do. But tell us what role prayer should play in evangelism.
Well, isn't it interesting? I alluded to this verse earlier. The harvest is ripe, but the laborers are few.
Mm.
Pray, therefore, to the Lord of the harvest to raise up people to go into the harvest field. So what we see Jesus is saying, one thing that we need to do when you recognize there's not a lot of people doing evangelism, well, it could be because we're not praying.
Mm.
We need to pray that God will raise up some people. And I think that another thing that prayer does is it makes us spiritually sensitive. And I mean, when we pray with expectation, like, Lord, help me to have opportunities. I mean, Tim, you know this whole opportunity that we just had with the family, just
yeah.
that we were connected with and we didn't see them. And God just brought this family together through such an amazing set of circumstances where we met this family at Chili's and they weren't supposed to be at Chili's and we weren't supposed to be at Chili's and we met. But then we didn't have their contact to follow up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like 30 miles away, my wife bumps in to this wife again. Like, and you know what? We've been praying for this family.
Yeah.
And so I think that God has a way of opening doors. And I think that there's been so many times and so many days where I've just checked out, like on really praying for non-believers. I'm really praying for opportunities.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I love about a church plant. I mean, you know, you're not going to have a church if you don't reach people.
Yeah.
And so being prayerful is huge for opening our eyes, for raising up workers and giving us the sensitivity. Even Paul said it in Colossians 4, pray that the Lord may open a door for me. But then he goes on to talk about the share of the gospel, right, as I ought to speak. Keep in mind, he's in prison for sharing the gospel, and he's saying, pray that God will open up a door for me to share.
Yeah.
Like, nothing's going to silence him.
Yeah. No, that's good. So I think the last thing that I want to cover here is sometimes apologists maybe rail against, they really push back against this idea of telling your story because they're like, oh, that's not really evidence. Focus on, you know, the evidence for God's existence, you know, explain the Kalam cosmological argument and, you know, explain the evidence for the resurrection and the biblical. Mm-hmm. But then they forget that sometimes they're talking to a person and that story is really compelling. Just, I mean, it's part of who we are. So we need to remember to know our story and to maybe start telling our story. How do we construct a good story? What? How do we tell our story well?
Well, I mean, you're spot on it. And one of the things that I can see sometimes with apologists, they're really good at knowing some of the arguments
mm-hmm.
Or some of the philosophy, but they're not always what I describe as the best biblicists.
Mm.
Like, so they know what arguments that they're passionate about,
yeah.
but just really being people of the book,
yeah.
knowing the word, I would say that sometimes that can be a weakness, where sometimes I can see maybe certain Bible teachers, they're really good biblicists, but sometimes they fail to understand the importance of good apologetic argumentation.
Yeah.
Very simply put, if we're biblicists, we'll know that Paul utilized sharing his own story yeah. on a number of occasions.
Yep.
So I think it's just understanding what your life was like before Christ, how you came to recognize your need for Jesus, you know, and the difference that Jesus has made in your life. those three segments can make a big difference in talking to somebody.
Yeah. And I would add to that, any commercial that you have seen on TV kind of follows that order. I mean, they set up this idea of what life is like without the product.
Yeah.
And they have the, you know, convergence of, oh, I found this product. And then they have a little bit at the end that's like, and now this is life.
This is the difference. The
product. And so I think just spending time thinking about some of those different elements, maybe you have a short, you know, 30-second commercial version, maybe you have a 5 or 10 minute version, and maybe you have a longer version that, depending on that context, you could share that with somebody else. So that's how I think of stories often.
Yeah, just don't talk too long because Eutychus fell out of the window and Paul had to go raise him from the dead.
It's true. Well, as we said at the beginning, we hope that this conversation was really helpful for you, and you can be thinking about these the next time that you share the gospel with somebody else. If we missed any, and we're sure we did, please leave those in the comments, and we'll see you next time on The Unapologetic Show. You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the 1 Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the 1 Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.